From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, February 16th, 2018. And on this day, we'll look at how President Trump's proposed cuts to mental health would impact Maine. And we'll talk about why a program intended to help uninsured Mainers get opioid treatment has fallen very short of its goals in its first year. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, four generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
After the school shooting in Florida this week, President Donald Trump vowed to tackle the difficult issue of mental health. But the president's proposed budget would cut many programs that provide mental health services. Patty White reports on what those changes could mean for Maine.
President Trump's proposed budget does include some increases in funding for mental health. But Dale Hamilton of Community Health and Counseling Services says the overall takeaway for Maine is this.
The short answer is that President Trump's budget will not advance access to mental health services.
One major way it would erect barriers to care, says Hamilton, are proposed cuts to Medicaid. The health care program for low-income individuals is the single largest payer in the U.S. for behavioral health services, according to the nonpartisan legislative agency, Medicaid and CHIP Payment and Access Commission. President Trump wants to put spending caps on Medicaid, which Hamilton says would limit the ability of service providers to deliver care. The president's proposed budget would also end Medicaid expansion and use that money to create healthcare block grants.
The challenge around accessing services is already huge, but then the concept of ending Medicaid expansion is just horrific.
Jenna Maynard is executive director of the Maine branch of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Maine voters passed a referendum last year to expand Medicaid. Exactly when or how it will be implemented is under question because of opposition by Governor LePage. But Maynard says it's a part of the Affordable Care Act that should be preserved because it's an important way to increase access to mental health care.
Is it in everybody's best interest, or is it reserved for the few who can pay? And the reality is that all of society suffers when people cannot access physical health and mental health services.
President Trump's proposed budget also cuts mental health funding under the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. Some programs would see an increase, including the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, which would get about $470 million for suicide prevention. But overall, says Dale Hamilton, the president's budget is a continuation of what he's witnessed for more than two decades, insufficient mental health funding.
I just don't think that we have a priority in the nation at this point to provide those resources.
It's something that Hamilton says tends to only be a part of initial discussions after an incident like what happened in Parkland, Florida. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
An elected official in New Hampshire is making a stunning accusation against the State Liquor Commission. He says the agency's turning a blind eye to illegal cash transactions involving out-of-state buyers, and he's calling for an outside investigation. NHPR's Todd Bookman has our story.
On February 3rd of this year, Executive Counselor Andrew Valinsky was inside a New Hampshire liquor store. He watched as a couple, who had arrived in a car with New York plates, placed an order for more than $24,000 worth of alcohol.
People working at the store, there must have been three or four people, compiled the order. They put it on hand trucks, big hand trucks. There were two of them.
When the pair went to pay for their purchase, the man pulled out a wad of cash, Valinsky says, and gave approximately half of it to his female companion. They each then made separate purchases, two cash transactions that fell just under $10,000 each, and put the balance on a credit card.
And because they were less than $10,000 in cash each, they avoided filling out the IRS 8300 form.
IRS Form 8300. It requires the name of the purchaser when the transaction includes more than $10,000 in cash. And this is key to Valinsky's charge. When he saw the couple break their purchase into two smaller sales to avoid filling out the IRS form, it was to hide this cash. They were breaking federal law. and the New Hampshire Liquor Commission, owned and operated by state government, he says has gone out of its way to make these transactions easier. Valinsky is a Democrat who serves on the 5-member executive council. Earlier this week, he submitted a memo containing his own observations, whistleblower statements, and official documents to the governor and attorney general's office.
This is a big enterprise, and the liquor sales fund a lot of important state programs. And so if I'm being told that part of those liquor sales may not be legal, may subject us to suit by a neighboring state, may put our employees in some danger, it becomes my responsibility to raise the issue.
Interestingly, the $24,000 purchase Valinsky witnessed involved almost exclusively Hennessy cognac. Hennessy, he alleges, is at the root of this scheme. Out-of-state residents are coming to New Hampshire to buy the cognac because of the state's lower prices. The Liquor Commission keeps thousands of bottles in its inventories, but only at stores near the state's southern borders. According to the commission's online inventory, the Londonderry Liquor Store has 3,500 bottles of Hennessy in stock, 2,600 in Keene. Meanwhile, in Peterborough, there were just 15 bottles, and 3 in Lebanon. No other liquor based on the online inventory is stocked in such large quantities.
There's certainly question raised about why it's stocked in those ways.
Valinsky's allegations may sound sensational, but there is some evidence that out-of-staters are coming to New Hampshire to make illegal bulk liquor buys. There have been 3 major busts involving New Hampshire-sold Hennessy in recent months, one in New York and 2 in Vermont. Those cases involved people who officials say were on their way back to New York City to sell the Hennessy to Chinese restaurants.
They had large quantities of cash. They had numerous gift cards, and it appears as though they go from one store to the other.
This is Vermont's Liquor Control Commissioner Patrick Delaney. He says the system of bootlegging is well known to authorities outside of New Hampshire.
The activity itself is basically tax evasion.
Potentially illegal all-cash transactions at New Hampshire liquor stores have also apparently caught the eye of the IRS. The agency wouldn't confirm an active investigation, but a spokesperson tells NHPR, quote, "We are aware of this and similar schemes." Valinsky alleges in his memo that the New Hampshire Liquor Commission has long known about these questionable transactions and may be assisting them. He writes that employees at liquor stores are being instructed to ignore suspicious bulk purchases, that the Liquor Commission is giving advance notice of promotions to these out-of-state customers, and he alleges cash-counting machines have been installed at certain stores to speed up transactions. He's calling for the Attorney General, as well as an outside auditor, to investigate these practices. The New Hampshire AG's office says it's still reviewing the documents submitted by Valinsky and can't yet comment. Governor Sununu's office declined to comment as well. The State Liquor Commission is a cash cow, one of the rare government agencies that gets high marks from most people. Last year, it generated $153 million in revenue for the state, accounting for 6% of the entire budget.
You know, we're a big contributor. It's a big part of the state's budget, and we're very, very pleased with the business and the way it's going.
That's Liquor Commission Chairman Joseph Malika speaking with WMUR last year. For its part, the commission point-blank rejects Valinsky's allegations that they're facilitating any questionable transactions. In a statement, the agency tells NHPR, there's nothing illegal or unscrupulous about making large sales to out-of-state customers as long as employees follow state and federal policies. The commission goes on to criticize Valinsky for his undercover work and for treating the commission as a, quote, political football. Rich Gola is president of the State Employees Association, the union which represents liquor store employees. He says he's heard concerns from his rank and file about the all-cash transactions.
They're starting to feel like a drug dealer because it's not common for folks to come in and drop $9,000 all on Hennessy products and then leave and go to another store and do the same thing.
Gullah himself is a longtime state liquor store manager in New Hampshire, who's now on a leave of absence during his union term. He says employee safety is put at risk by processing these sales.
Sooner or later, somebody's going to figure out that these people are coming in on a regular basis with all this cash, putting it out on the counter, counting it all. They're just thankful no one's been hurt.
There will likely be a fair amount of cash moving through the stores during February. Bottles of Hennessy cognac are on sale at state-run liquor stores through the end of the month. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Todd Bookman.
And finally today, the LePage administration last year announced a plan to devote almost $5 million in state and federal money to medication-assisted treatment for opioid addiction, especially for people who don't have health insurance. The Opioid Health Home Program was supposed to be a big step forward in comprehensively dealing with the opioid crisis. But from the beginning, there have been concerns that it was too complicated to work. And as the Portland Press Herald reports today, some of those concerns seem to be borne out. In a memo, the Department of Health and Human Services says the program has so far only treated about 50 people, only five of whom were uninsured. Mallory Shaughnessy is executive director of the Alliance for Addiction and Mental Health Services Maine, a trade group that represents providers. She says often people with dealing with opioid use disorder are also dealing with several other issues.
They are having trouble with housing. They're having trouble with jobs. They don't necessarily have a job. They don't have insurance. They are in a bad place in their life at that time, and they need help pulling the pieces together again for recovery. When we talk about recovery and a recovery-oriented system of care, we talk about those other pieces, the housing, the some purpose in your life, some job, something that you're doing, and trying to pull all those pieces together when you're struggling with opioid use disorder is very hard. So it added that level of care, which is great, would be great to have. Currently, you can't get care coordination for your treatment. Without this kind of a wraparound. So we were excited about the concept, but from the very beginning, the way that they put it together had some serious, we had serious concerns about.
In order for somebody to get treatment under this model who does not have insurance, what needs to be in place?
Somebody would need to find a provider providing an opioid health home model to get that treatment, and that's been the problem. In the release that the department made, they name a number of agencies that have signed up to do this service, and they mention many more that they're in the process of signing contracts with to do this service. But the reality is there's only a couple of providers that actually are doing this service right now. The rest are really negotiating how they can make it work. And so if you're somebody trying to get this, get into an opioid health home, you have to find somebody doing it. And unfortunately, there's two that are actively doing it that I am aware of.
And how does your organization feel this money would be more productively spent?
We feel it would have been more productively spent targeting it really to the uninsured and expanding what is current capacity, more slots for folks that don't have insurance. The model of having an enhanced services is great, but people are dying every day. And had this money just been put to providing more access to people without insurance, lives would have been saved.
What are you hoping for the future with this?
I think what we would hope to see the model adjusted and adapted so that it could be a part of a behavioral health home as an add-on type of service for folks that have mental illness and substance use disorder, or as a standalone enhanced care for folks in treatment for substance use. But we really need to see the model cleaned up a little bit so that more providers are able to do it.
Do you feel that this is a symptom of a more underlying problem?
It's just been the problems where we don't have a collaborative relationship with the administration. In the past, provider community and administration worked more closely in trying to figure out how things would work, whether that be the medical provider community, the behavioral health provider community. And I think that that's unfortunate that we don't have that.
Mallory Shaughnessy is Executive Director of the Alliance for Addiction and Mental Health Services Maine. Mallory, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. It's been great to be on with you.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Friday, February 16th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a good weekend.